Snack Bar Games Podcast. And welcome to the Snack Bar Games Podcast, episode 214. I'm Graham, and I'm here with Andrew, Jerry, and Matt. How's it going, guys?
Pretty good.
Zelda.
Da-da. Yes, we sold a lot of Zeldas today.
Yeah, so it's been a busy week in gaming, and we're going to try to cover what we can. We can't cover everything. And we're going to hold off on talking about Zelda until we have a little more time with it. But rest assured, I think our initial impressions are what, guys?
Good. Very good. You can't see it, but I'm giving a thumbs up.
Not a bad game, probably.
Yep.
Well, I think I'm confident enough to say that it's probably all right.
Well, you could at least say it's a Zelda game.
You can, but then, you know, there are CDI games that make that not a universal truth.
But are those really Zelda games?
Well, one of them is really the only Zelda game.
True.
Yeah. All right. let's start off with some... you know what? Let's start off with what we promised we'd get back to, and that's a little more Skyrim discussion. What do you think, guys, after a couple weeks under your belt? Any more insight?
I've killed 6 dragons so far. I think maybe 7. I think I'm a dragon slaying pro.
How many hours are you into it?
26.
Okay, I'm 20 hours in, and every time I see a dragon, I'm like, fuck, and I just run away.
That's what I used to do.
Yeah, they just tear my shit up every single time I see one of them. And it's always terrifying, because it's always like the music kicks in, I'm like, oh no, where is it? And he just lands next to me and is like, what's up? And then just breathes fire down my face.
Have you started to fight blood dragons yet?
I just fought one. Yes.
From what I can tell, all dragons become blood dragons when you hit level 20? Does that sound about right? Because... I didn't see any dragons, and then I hit level 20, and then all I see is blood dragons now.
I'm still level 18, and I've already seen 2 blood dragons, so I don't know if that's... I mean, maybe I'll still see regular dragons until I hit level 20, so I don't know how true that is, but I am seeing blood dragons now, so...
Okay, so that might have just been coincidence with me. I've been grinding. Not intentionally or anything, but...
Yeah, it just happens.
Well, I killed a whole bunch of dragons, so I had all this as, like... you know, dragon bones and dragon scales. So, and like, I was having trouble storing them. I put them in the house, but like, what am I doing with those? Like, what do you do with the dragon plate and the dragon bones and the dragon scales? It's like, oh, you have to forge armor with them. That's like the only thing they're really good for.
Or sell them. They're worth a lot of money.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, they're worth a lot of money, but like, I don't know. I figured I'd do something with them, but then I was like, all right, so I just need to forge some armor. The thing is, you need smithing to level 100 to get those guys.
I haven't done any of that, really, except maybe, like, at the very beginning.
Well,
yeah, I've done that. I've just been wearing stuff that I find. Like, I joined the Thieves Guild, and they gave me new armor. Well, plus, I'm also an archer, so all my...
Now, I mean, until you get your armor way up, and, in fact, until you get your enchantment way up, like, the armor you find is way better than the armor you can make.
Uh-huh.
But the thing is, with smithing, you can just... I mean, everybody says iron daggers, and that's kind of true, because they require not very much, but the thing is... Usually when you're done making iron daggers, you'll have a whole bunch of leather left. So if you just make, like, leather gauntlets and iron daggers, it goes really fast.
Did you read that story about that guy who, like, fleshed a town's economy with iron daggers, and now they're worthless in that town?
I didn't hear about this.
Like, he made enough iron daggers and sold them to everyone in the town that they were worthless. Like, the resale value was just dropped, and, like, they were in everybody's house, and everybody, like, the... When you put them out into that ocean, you know, they spread and they stay. Like, there's a set number of them in the game until, well, you know, all the shops get refilled every morning. But, like, if you put them out there, they'll stay out there and they'll move around.
That's crazy.
I never even knew about that.
Yeah, it's really cool.
But yeah, so I made the armor, and then I thought I'd test it out. So I was over in one of the towns for the like bare knuckle fist fight challenges. Mm-hmm. And then I noticed that wearing all this dragon armor, that his punching didn't do more damage than my health regen. So
you're just standing there.
I got punched for 6 days, and then I accidentally hit him, so it stopped.
Did he go flying or something, or did he just fall over?
Oh no, he didn't fly. You know, he didn't go flying with the fist fight.
Oh, okay.
I'm a mage, so everything goes flying.
Oh,
hit it. Which is really kind of frustrating, actually, because like when you want to try to loot the body, like where did that thing go? I have no idea. Especially like trying to get like wolf pelts and things. It's like
wait, so. Were you letting him continue to punch you just for your amusement, or just seeing how long it would last?
Yeah, well, I started punching him at first, and then I realized like can he kill me? And he couldn't kill me. And then it was, you know, the thing is, every time you get hit, it raises your armor a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I was grinding heavy armor, I guess.
That's great. That is great. I kind of want to try that now if I ever make armor like that.
Yeah, well, it's cool because, like, you know, the dragon can be dragon scale or dragon plate armor. So if you go light or heavy armor, there's still a good dragon for each one. But anyway, that's been my Skyrim experience week two.
Well, I joined the Dark Brotherhood.
Yeah.
And I am very, very good at getting caught when I try to kill people. So I ended up getting an achievement for having 1,000 bounty in every major hold in Skyrim. So that's nine different places all across the map. I had 1,000 or more bounty. And I didn't even realize it until an achievement popped telling me that I had that. And I was like, oh, well, okay, cool.
That's awesome.
Hey, I'm really good at this, aren't I?
To get that, do you have to... I mean, like, when you pay off your bounty, you still have it? Like, for the
purposes
of the achievement? Or?
No, you have to... Yeah, it has to all be at once. And I was pretty much traveling all over the place for the Dark Brotherhood. Until the very end, you never go to one place more than once. So you always go to a different place for different assignments. And I ended up going to most of the cities, or major cities in Skyrim, and getting that bounty without realizing. And I just kind of just ran away because guards were still attacking me, and they will continue to attack you until you re-enter the city. And then they approach you and they're like, "Well, do you want to go to jail, or do you want to pay the bounty, or what?" So I never ended up going back to any of those places because I was just focusing on Dark Brotherhood stuff. So it was crazy. There's this pretty awesome set of missions near the very end that I won't get the specifics about. But at the end, I ended up going to this one place I hadn't been to in a while. I can't remember where it was exactly. And I had to do this mission that involved killing someone, of course. And then, of course, I ran. And then as I was running, the achievement popped, and I was very confused, and then I looked at my bounty, my crime thing, and it had bounties for every town. So I ended up having to go. I just ended up traveling to every town and paying 1,000 just to get it away. Because I was like, I didn't realize I pissed so many people off. But I guess that's what happens when you're in the Dark Brotherhood. So that's pretty much been my Skyrim experience for the past week. Just killing.
Yeah.
That's something I haven't been able to figure out yet. When you do have a bounty in a place. Is there any way to disguise yourself? Like, can you, cause it pretty much seems like they still have a little bit of their ESP, the guards, where like as soon as you set foot anywhere near the town, they're like, oh, and they just run at you. But is there, like, could I like wear like a mask or a hood or something and kind of sneak around even if I have a bounty?
Well, you could probably sneak if your sneak is high enough, but. Yeah.
But I want to like Assassin's Creed through there. I want to like put my hood up and just like go sit in an inn and just like hang out.
I'm pretty sure there's, at least that I know of, I don't think there's any way to do that. Because as soon as you even come close to approaching a town, a guard or many guards will run out and just be like,
"Stop,
citizen."
His GPS goes off.
Yeah, exactly. They'll be like, "Stop, citizen, you have done evil things and you're a bad person and you should die." But
in this one town, did you guys do this thing where you had to sneak into a guy's museum to get, did anyone join the Thieves Guild yet?
Not yet.
Yeah, okay, not yet.
I had joined the Thieves Guild, and I had to go to this guy's, like, he, like, worked in a museum and had this book that translated something, and I had to go in there and get it, and I got it, and as I was leaving, a bunch of guards just, like, poured in, because they're like, "We know he's in here somewhere," because they just knew someone saw it. They didn't know it was me. Like, everyone knew me, because I was in the town to infiltrate it, and I'm out there, and I'm on this big perch watching all these guards come in. I'm like, "Well, how the hell am I going to get past these guards?" He's like, you know what? Fuck it. And I just jumped down and ran. And they're like, what? Oh, God. And they all, like, turned around and chased me. And then I had, like I was on top of the building, which is on top of this mountain, which overlooked the whole town. And I could just see guards look like ants at a picnic. They were just all across the whole town just waiting for me to jump down. And I had to, like, die hard my way through it. It was amazing. I didn't fight a single one. I just got out of that town.
That's awesome.
It was like that movie Quick Change with Bill Murray. I don't know if you guys know that movie.
I'm not that familiar with that movie.
It's a really good movie. It was just like that.
Have you been using pots and baskets efficiently?
I really try not to. I pretty much just do it to mess around. Like I do it just to be fun. Like if I'm talking to someone and they're taking forever and just talking, and I'll just mess with them while I'm talking to them. Like I just drop pots on their head or like just put it. Like I just pick up all their stuff and put it in a pile in the middle of the room because I know they're gonna have to clean it up later.
When I was doing an assassination mission for the Dark Brotherhood, I ended up, it was in this inn, and it was like early, early morning when everyone had left, and there was only the inn, the person who owned the inn, and the person I needed to kill just kind of sitting there. So I put a pot over their head. The person I needed to kill was standing maybe 2-3 feet away from that person who had the pot over their head. I killed them, and I just walked out like nothing happened. The pot was still there. I was like, oh, so this actually really does work. That was probably the only time I was able to get away with a kill without getting caught.
Yeah, I really try not to do it because it like completely breaks the game for me.
Yeah, I understand. Oh, Dark Brotherhood. One side note about it: when you play it, do the quest line because if you like having a horse that will stick around forever, you get a horse that does not die.
I've heard about this horse.
I've read
tale of this horse.
It is a great horse. So yes, if you want something to look forward to with the Dark Brotherhood,
sounds like the perfect horse for Matt then.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can ride him down waterfalls as many times as you want.
See if the horse can jump off. My horse is an idiot, but I love him. Like I've had the chance to get better horses, but I'm like, no, you've been with me this long and you're not dead yet. And I also discovered I don't know if this glitch works all the time, so I only did it once or twice. Where if you're swimming with your horse, because the horse swims really slow. If you hop off of him and hop back on, he'll just go into the regular riding animation and you can just run underwater. Like, he'll be floating still, but he'll be doing the full, like, running with his stamina, like, full blast.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it helps you get across big rivers and oceans and stuff really easily.
All right. Well, I think that's about what we've been doing with Skyrim, so let's move on and... talk about some news. Jerry, you're filling in on the news desk this week. What is going on?
Metal Gear Solid 5 is a thing that exists, maybe.
No way.
Metal Gear.
That has taken me by surprise. I was not expecting Metal Gear Solid 5.
What happened is the other one coming out?
Rising? Yeah.
Yeah.
They're supposed to announce the big news regarding it at the VGAs. Yeah.
The only thing is that they're renaming it Metal Gear Solid 5.
I don't think it's that. Nah, I think Rising is still gonna come out. And I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see MGS 5 until maybe 2013.
Yeah,
possibly. But, I mean,
what's it gonna be about?
At this point, it's kind of like just okay. It's a thing that we're thinking about, but it's not really. They don't really have anything concrete about it yet.
Well, Kojima's working on it. He's heading the project again. After he said, maybe, what was it, been three times now? That
he's retired done? Several
he's,
times.
Yeah. I don't know if Konami has something on him. It's like, well, you better work on this next MGS game or else we'll do this. And I don't know.
But what about Zone of the Enders? No, Metal Gear.
Yeah, exactly. He's apparently working on some other project that doesn't even have a name yet. So at least it's not something that's not Metal Gear related, supposedly.
Bogtai 3.
Yeah, there you go. The sequel, everyone's... Like everyone's
there was a Bogtai 3.
Wait, there Isn't was that... a Bogtai 3?
Yeah, there was a Bogtai 3.
In America, it was renamed something else.
Oh, and Lunar Knights.
Yeah, that was a good game.
Okay.
In Japan, that's Bogtai 3.
Really? They called it Bogtai 3 there? I knew it was like a spinoff
it's got,
game.
It's got Bogtai in the name. It might have been more of a spinoff. Bogtai Gaiden.
Yeah, but that wasn't really like it didn't use the same technology that the first
It does
two
in Japan.
Games. Does it?
Oh, America but... didn't. They took it out.
Ah. Okay.
They're big old pansies. But the thing is, yes, Kojima can retire as many times as he wants, but do you follow that guy's Twitter? Like, he obviously doesn't have much to do. He just talks just all the time, just like, look at this picture of this thing I'm eating. Like, Kojima tweets like you think townies from your high school tweet. Hanging out at the museum. True. Yeah. It's,
I don't know. And I just click on every single day of the week.
Yeah, I click on every single link too, and I'm always mad when I do.
Because it's just more food.
Yeah, it's just food that he's eating, and I'm like, I don't care. him and Yuji Naka are the most boring.
He should be like, exclusive details on MGS5 here, and you click on it, it's just a picture of food again. Yep. I want that to happen.
And TweetDeck doesn't display Japanese characters, so it's always just the Imgur link. And so I always imagine he's just tweeting these pictures into the ether.
That's because you're not using the international font with TweetDeck.
I don't care. I don't need to read text I can't read.
There's a Kojima English account. You could just follow that one.
I don't need that at all. I don't need to understand why I'm bored. I just know that I'm bored.
Okay.
By his stupid thing.
I'm a huge fan of the series, so I'm just excited about MGS5, but I hope there's no more Snake. Or at least the Snake that was in MGS4, because...
No more Solid Snake?
Yeah, Teenage no more Solid Snake.
It's likely going to be a Snake, because, I mean, that's part of the thing with the series.
About Liquid Snake? Not Liquid Snake?
Teen Snake.
Are we okay with, like, Gas Snake?
Baby Snake.
Gaseous Snake?
Yes.
What if it's Dead Snake? What if you're a ghost? And just haunting people.
It's secretly a
sneaking around people's houses.
It's secretly a spiritual successor to Geist.
So yeah. They're working
close with Nintendo for the Wii U revival, and just calling it Metal Gear 5.
Oh man, that game could have been so good, and it was not.
could it really have been?
Yeah, the whole idea of being a ghost that possesses people—that's a cool idea.
Yeah, I mean,
but just making it like a Fear ripoff was not a good idea.
They kind of remade that game, and it was also not good.
Too human.
I was gonna say Mind Jack, but sure.
Oh, ooh, Mind Jack.
Mind Jack. Oh god.
Dog food.
But So MGS5, Peace Walker was supposed to be like it wasn't called Metal Gear Solid 5, but people at Konami considered it Metal Gear Solid 5. So it's weird.
There was actually a piece of promotional material that said Metal Gear Solid 5 Peace Walker, but yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I mean. I still have never played Peace Walker, and I really need to because I have the HD collection now. But
we'll co-op it once we get it.
Yeah. Is the co-op online?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, nice.
Yeah, the co-op is actually.
Yeah, I'm gonna get it at some point. I'll play with you. I've still never played the first Metal Gear Solid game, you guys.
The very first.
Yeah, the first one.
But have you played the others?
I played a bunch of 2 back like when it first came out, but I that was so long ago I barely remember it.
Were you confused as all hell?
Probably. I was like 13 or 14, so I was confused by a lot of stuff. But and Metal Gear Solid 3, I played that when it came out, and I was like 15 when that came out, or 16, and I never finished it, but I got really deep into it.
I loved it
when I played it.
But So yeah, it'll be interesting to see where they go with it, because I think Solid Snake is done, but they could probably do another prequel with maybe Big Boss. I don't know. Again, I don't know how Peace Walker's story plays out, so I don't know.
Kojima came up with Solid Snake for Metal Gear Solid 2. I'm sure he can come up with some other name.
You could be a younger Big Boss, and it's a prequel to 3, and it's in the 20s. You're like a gangster.
They should just have a prequel to MGS3 where you play as the boss. How about that? I would play that game.
Well, Kojima hates women, doesn't he? Isn't he, like, really misogynistic? I don't know. I don't know where he got that from. Oh, probably from every video game he's ever made. But other than that, like, actual things he said, I don't know if he's... Wait. I always kind of got that idea. It was because he's Japanese and they're all kind of like that.
Yeah, but wasn't Kojima's first game about this, like... I vaguely remember hearing this, that his first game was like this like MSX title about like a girl penguin saving her brother or something.
Club Penguin.
Okay. Well, I mean, I guess maybe I'm the only one who's heard about that. But
yeah, did you make the first Club Penguin game?
All right, Jerry. What else is going on?
All right, there's Ticket to Court over there, E3 Battlefield 1943 promise about how the PS3 version was going to get the exclusive an exclusive extra game along with Battlefield 3, and then mentioned that they weren't going to do it until after the game came out. So they're getting taken to court over it.
Yeah.
That's really stupid.
Yeah, well, I guess we didn't really talk about it when it came up, but it does make an interesting point that they didn't say that the game wasn't going to have Battlefield 1943 on the disc like they promised until people had already pre-ordered it, purchased it, opened it, you know.
Was the game supposed to come with Battlefield 1943?
Yeah, at E3.
That's really cool. That's a good game.
Yeah,
that didn't happen.
I didn't know that this was supposed to happen.
Yeah,
I didn't even buy Battlefield 3 yet, and I'm mad about this.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's part of this trend on PS3 where it's like, okay, this disc is phenomenally larger than the 360 disc.
Instead of us making the game better with this technology, let's just
put another
more
game on it.
Yeah. Instead of treating it the way it is, where, yeah, we want this extra space, how about we make the game bigger or better? But, I mean, it's cool when some companies do, like a UB put, you know, that kind of stuff. But still, like, have we really seen a game really take, like, other than just not having extra discs, like, really take advantage of the space? Maybe Rage. No, Rage even had that big install.
Yeah, that was a recorded install.
Well, I do know a few games would have, was it Battlefield, actually, that had all those extra texture packs?
The texture pack, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Was that a download or was that on the disc?
For the 360, it was not mandatory, but on the PS3, it was like a mandatory install.
Because
they can't do that with 360 because not everyone has a hard drive, so.
Right. Well, I was just thinking that I vaguely remember something about that being like a download rather than being on the disc for the 360.
It's probably some kind of install for the PS3, but I don't think that's what it is.
It wasn't a separate download. Maybe it was. You know, I can't even remember. As soon as I found the game, it asked me if I wanted to download/install this texture pack, and I don't remember if it was right off the disc or it was something that was downloaded separately. I can't remember.
Well, that might not be one of the games that did it, but I've definitely heard of, like, all right, we have this thing that we can't fit on the disc in a 360, but we can put it on the PS3. You're gonna have to download it in 360, and that's at least something.
Yeah.
But while we bring up the 1943 thing, we should probably mention that if you get Saints Row 3 on the PS3 and you activate the online pass, they're giving you Saints Row 2 for free, which seems pretty cool.
It's funny because that wasn't the original plan that was that Saints Row the Third was going to have some exclusive, I think, co-op missions, or I don't remember exactly
it was some kind of a mode type thing
that ended up getting cut from the game entirely.
Yeah, exactly. And then they just never mentioned it again after, because that was another thing I think they mentioned at E3. And then it never came to fruition. And then all of a sudden they're like, a week later, they're like, oh, or maybe not a week, but a couple days later, they're like, oh, we never actually gave them that exclusive PS3 content. Have Saints Row 2.
I think that's a good, like, example for the situation.
No, that's a good trade. Because I mean,
where they could really give something to PS3 Battlefield owners.
They're actually getting a free game for it. Because in Battlefield's case, it's like, oh, we're going to give you 1943. We're backing up on that offer, but in return, you can pay us for the DLC content a week earlier. How's about that?
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think if EA had actually tried to make good and give people something, you know,
the DLC arrangement for the PS3 owners getting the DLC a week earlier than the 360 owners, they're saying that that's like the exchange for not getting 1943. But that deal was already in place before 1943 got cut.
I think you're right. But, I mean, I don't know, is it really something that's worth taking them to court for?
I don't know. I do think it holds weight, because as long as at least one person bought the game solely because they thought that that Battlefield 3 would come with 1943 on the PS3, I do think that they're in the right about it.
Yeah, it was the thing that the developer promised us.
Yeah, but
you should get it.
Taking them to court just seems so ridiculous. It's okay if you're upset about it, but I don't know.
Why haven't they just given out like download codes to make it okay? Why aren't they just like,
defend EA's actions here. I just think the reaction to it is kind of ridiculous. But I think the reaction to a lot of things in the gaming press is ridiculous. So I guess it's not really.
But isn't there an easy solution where EA goes, "Wow, we fucked up. All right, you know, here's a bunch of download codes.
Yeah,
if you bought the game." Then
Matt, this is EA we're talking about.
Well, yeah, when they get sued, they might do something like that. Probably not.
I don't know. I just think it's silly, but yeah. I don't know.
All right, moving on. Jerry, how about one more news item?
One more news? Torchlight 2 got delayed?
Yeah. So, you know, I was excited about Torchlight 2 when it was going to come out well before Diablo 3.
Well, okay. it's kind of not fair to expect them to really. I mean, maybe not fair isn't what I want to use, but here. But it's weird that they would want to release it in such a crowded season. I mean, wouldn't it do better if it were released like early next year instead?
Sure. I mean, I don't fault them for not wanting to release it like right now or even early December. But, you know, the idea was that it was going to come out in the summer and that, you know, you'd have that and you'd play that for a while, you know. But now they're pushing it so close to what we think is going to be the Diablo 3 launch, then that's its real competition, you know.
Well, at least you can take solace in that if you're on a plane with your laptop and two video games, you know what game you can play and which one you can't.
This is true.
It's true. You can play your Neo Geo Pocket Color on a plane.
But does it have Torchlight?
It has Dark Arms Beast Busters, which is pretty good.
Yeah, Beast Busters. Pretty good game.
It's kind of like Torchlight. Yeah.
I like how we come back to that.
Yeah, moving on, let's go to what we've been playing, but nothing really got released this week, so how about we just talk about, I don't know, college basketball.
No, thank you.
this is the point of the show when you insert cricket chirping.
All right. Nah, we've been bombarded with game this week, and we can't even cover them all. So let's start with you, Andrew. What you've been playing?
All right. Well, I guess I could start by talking about Assassin's Creed.
Right.
Assassin's Creed Revelations is.
I'm gonna go take a nap, you guys.
Okay.
I'll be back.
All right.
Is it a revelation?
Okay, well, so far there have been no revelations. unless finding out that you play as Ezio again is a revelation, then, man, you're in for a surprise. You're playing as Ezio again. Oh, I just ruined it. I'm sorry, guys. Okay.
If there are no revelations in Assassin's Creed Revelations, then we should probably sue them.
You know, I think we should sue Ubisoft.
They made a promise. My receipt
the
is like a written
version.
Contract.
The PS3 version not only comes with Assassin's Creed 1, but extra revelations. I hope they deliver, or else they're screwed. No, but it's. I think playing this game made me realize with like this and Modern Warfare 3, this is kind of the year of diminishing returns. Whereas you kind of just see these franchises that I think are still good. Don't get me wrong, they're still fine franchises, but they're really starting to fall behind. And like Assassin's Creed still looks good, but the engine is just so ancient at this point. It just looks so. When you first climb up on a tower and you do this pan of the city that you're in, and like the first Assassin's Creed and the second, it's pretty amazing. You're like, wow, this is great. And then two more games later, it's just kind of, oh well, the city looks kind of ugly now. I don't want to do this. Stop showing me this ugly city. I'm just going to go back to stabbing people. It just doesn't look that good anymore. So, but that aside, it's still a lot of fun. I think the story is really slow. Like the stuff with Desmond that was usually like kind of one of the main focuses of the story in the past few games is kind of in the back burner. Like all the Desmond stuff is completely missable. You don't have to do any of it. But it's weird the way they do it. With you collect these animus fragments around the city. These are the main collectibles in the game. And when you collect them, you unlock missions that for Desmond they're like first person puzzle platformers.
No.
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 What? Wait. What?
First.
I was half listening to that, and when I came back, I was like, I didn't hear what he just said.
As in, you are playing as Desmond in the animus in first person. You are stacking blocks and climbing them to get to the next objective. And as you were doing that, backstory on Desmond is being filled out. as he's trying to recover his memories.
Did now, Ubisoft hate Desmond? Like, as someone who knows what Assassin's Creed is and has absorbed it from not playing, like, I've only played the first game, I never finished it. You could never know that Desmond was even a character, or that the game was sci-fi at all. Like, it seems like they really don't like that aspect of it and always feel like it's kind of shoved in, you know?
That's, I don't know if that's true, though, because the main selling point on this game is that it's Ezio and Altair's last, you know, games. This is going to wrap up their stories completely. We're never going to see them again, supposedly. So Desmond is kind of, like I said, is kind of put in the back burner. I think he was a pretty big focus in the first three games. Maybe not so much in the first. In the first, he was just kind of like, hi, I'm this guy who's here, and I'm going on the computer to follow Altair.
Yeah, hi, I'm Nolan North.
Yeah, hi, I'm Nolan North. But in the second and third, I think he played a much bigger role. And in this game, it's definitely going back to the first game in terms of he's just kind of here in the background. And then between the memory sequences, you hear a little bit from him. And then of course, all of his actual gameplay sections are just optional. And you don't even have to do them. You can just completely skip them if you want. But I actually think they're pretty fun. For a game that has never really done that before, it's interesting. And the puzzles are kind of clever, and the backstory you get on Desmond is actually probably the most interesting Desmond-related content in any of the Assassin's Creed games. I've only done one and a half of them so far, because I was doing another one and my power went out, and I didn't want to start it over, so I haven't gotten back to that yet. But it's fun, and I think it's a nice change of pace from, you know, what Assassin's Creed usually is, which is, you know, following people, stabbing people. That's still fun, too. And then, tower defense. There's also tower defense, which I think is the weakest point of the game, because I'm not a huge fan of tower defense in general, but in this it just kind of feels just not, it's, it hasn't been, it's not really well implemented. It just feels so out of place. You're suddenly, okay, you have to defend this stronghold against the Templars. Okay, now you have to build these towers and place these assassins in certain points to try to, you know, do tower defense-y stuff, but it's not really that fun. It's not difficult. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe because I'm not that far into the game yet. But it just feels tacked on. Like, the Desmond stuff, the first-person puzzle stuff with Desmond feels out of place too, but I think it's well implemented in the story. This stuff just kind of, I don't know, it just doesn't work. Maybe it's because I'm not a fan of that, of tower defense stuff in general, but I've done two of them so far, two major sections in the story so far, and they're just kind of bleh. So
I'd imagine that most of the people who were into Assassin's Creed are not into tower defense. Yeah. You know, it's like when Brutal Legend came out and they had RTS stuff and people were like, what is this?
Yeah, because they completely mismarketed that game. Like, it was not meant to be. I mean, nobody, unless you were really following that game, most people who bought it, which were very few people, actually expected it to be a real-time strategy game. So,
And even the demo, like, was just entire yeah. action game.
Yeah, the first part of that, it just played through the first part of that game, and it, you know, people who played that were like, man, this is a pretty cool action game, and then of course.
Yeah, it's a funny, cool game with Jack Black in it.
We can go off on Brutal Legend if you want, but
I still haven't played it, so yeah, I probably will play it sometime soon, because it's super cheap now, and then I will probably spend a good half hour talking about it on this podcast.
It's not a bad game, it's just the strategy stuff is kind of weird. But anyway, Assassin's Creed. It's aside from the tower defense stuff, and aside from the Desmond stuff, the new Desmond stuff, it's pretty much the same. You get some new gadgets. Oh, you can make bombs now. So if you play the Assassin's Creed games before, there is this thing where you can just throw money on the ground and distract guards and random pedestrians. But this time you could do it, and it's a bomb. So you
put buckets in their heads.
So you, I wish that'd be great. Just learn from Skyrim's glitches. You can.
It's not a glitch; it's a feature.
All right. Okay.
That should that's be. A, that's feature. How I would spin it if I were them. I'd be like, we did. It's hilarious, right? Okay, we did it on purpose.
Yeah.
That's no gift.
But no, like if you're trying to, like, there's a section with guards and you want to throw, like, you usually throw money on the ground and they'll all be like, oh, I'm just gonna ignore my duties to pick up this money, and then everyone's like, money, money, money. So while they're doing that, it's also a bomb. It explodes, and then
a money bomb.
Yeah, it's a money bomb. It's
like that guy from Skylanders.
This
guy in Skylanders that throws safes and he shoots money at people.
Huh. Well, he doesn't. Yeah. Ezio doesn't throw safes, but I guess.
Did I tell you guys that I bought a Skylander?
Why?
Yeah.
I bought a figure because I'll own the game at some point when it's cheaper. But I totally bought a Skylander.
That seems like a pretty neat game.
I really want to play it really bad.
Okay.
Assassin's Creed. Final thoughts. It's fun, but again, I really hope they do something a bit. Like, if the next game is going to focus on more of Desmond and then a new character that isn't Ezio or Altair, I think they can probably mix things up in terms of both the setting and the gameplay. And I really hope they do, because...
honest question here. Is the burnout starting to set in, like, third game in a year?
Maybe when I get farther into it, it will. Like, at first, I kind of was like, oh, more of this. I mean, I wanted to play it, but I was like, this is kind of... The first section of the game is bad, legitimately bad. It just doesn't... It starts off on the wrong foot. But once you get back into the open city, Assassin's Creed, to me, is still fun. So, like I said, the series isn't bad. It's just, if there was another game with Ezio next year, and with the same kind of stuff, then I would probably start getting sick of it. But I think they've finally... I think this is the peak of that series. Maybe not in terms of quality, just in terms of how much they can get away with following these same characters. So hopefully next year.
Wasn't the deal originally going to be like every Assassin's Creed game had some different time period and character?
Well, the time periods are slightly different, but they're still like it's still kind of the same.
If it played the same, if they just went through different time periods, that'd be really interesting. If they just kept unlocking Desmond's, family history.
That's what I'm hoping they do. Everyone was expecting the next game to be Assassin's Creed 3, and then they announced Brotherhood, and then they're like more Ezio, and everyone kind of groaned at first. But Brotherhood is actually still the best game in the series in my mind. So I think if they do the improvements they did in Brotherhood, but with a new character and some new interesting story parts, and hopefully a lot of new gameplay innovations like they did from Assassin's Creed 1 to 2. Then I could see the series becoming fresh again. But if they continue just on this path that they've been going for the last three games, then yeah, it's really gonna start to drag, and I think I might begin to lose interest. But right now, Revelations is pretty fun, and I think if you're a fan of the series, I think it's still worth getting. But I don't know how much you're willing to take of this same stuff.
I'll continue playing the series without paying a dime for it. So
yeah, I'll give it a chance at some point.
Assassin's Creed 2.
I've been meaning to for a long time. Yeah. I always hear that 2 is a big step up from 1.
Really is, because I didn't like the first game that much at all.
I played the first game when it first came out, and I remember not liking it, and then that kind of just soured me on the series. Because I don't think that the idea of first game syndrome had sunk in my brain yet, where pretty much the first game in most series is not very good. which still happens, and it really upsets me that people still don't know how to make a video game for the first time.
But I mean, the ideas were there, and then with the sequel, they were definitely able to take those and improve upon them tenfold.
Oh, yeah, so. I mean, I'm one of those that really, really didn't like the first game. Then I gave the second one a shot, and whoa, it's a totally different improvement.
Yeah, I think everyone had pretty lowered not very high expectations for the sequel. That's probably why it did so well, and everyone was so surprised with it. But maybe that's why Ubisoft thinks they're kind of safe to continue doing that. I mean, there are improvements and there are new things in each game. But it's not the leap forward.
We should be expecting a leap of that magnitude for 3. And if they don't, then they're gonna have some trouble with the series in the future.
Well, okay, so Ubisoft said next year. Is it? I have to ask something, by the way, before I continue. Is it Ubisoft or Ubisoft?
Ubisoft.
Ubisoft. Okay.
Ubisoft.
I've been Ubisoft.
Ubi, okay, I keep pronouncing it wrong, so I apologize. But anyway,
Ubisoft.
As Ego Raptor says.
Okay, all right. That French company promised next year that the next year's game is going to be the last for Desmond. So who knows what they're going
to do? Oh, come on. That's the one character I want to see move on.
Well, I don't expect much from that with Revelations, because like I said, he's kind of put in the background. But the next game, maybe the next game will just be all Desmond. There won't even be any Animus stuff.
It'd be so awesome, like run around like a Blade Runner-y future, but like with Assassin's Creed controls. How fucking cool would that be?
It would be cool. I think that would be a great send off for this kind of timeline. And then maybe with the game after that, they can completely kind of not reboot it, but just start fresh with a brand new protagonist, and then a brand new protagonist in the past.
Assassin's Creed in space.
Yeah, there...
God, that'd be so cool. You ever notice, like, this is probably a good thing to wrap up Assassin's Creed with, but you ever, like, notice during interviews and stuff that there's always a bunch of paintings behind them of assassins we're probably never going to see from different time periods? Like, there's one... there's someone talking about this game, and there was a Civil War assassin on the screen, like, jumping over, like, Civil War guys, stabbing someone with a big... I think it was a Confederate flag.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, that's even, the kind of stuff if, I want.
I want to see them explore more with, like, Ezio is a great character. I think he's a much better character than Altair, but mostly because he has personality. But
20s like, gangster assassin running around Chicago.
Yeah, I want to see them explore more. Like, they could still continue with the stuff in the past, but I want to see them. I really want to see them, explore the different new assassins and new time periods, because I think that would be what draws new fans into the series. Those who are kind of maybe burnt out on the Ezio stuff, I think. With the next game, I'm hoping they continue Desmond's story and then maybe delve into a new assassin and a new time period. And I think that might be enough to kind of freshen the series up a bit. But as it stands, another game like this, with maybe just subtle changes, won't be enough. So we'll see what happens next year.
I want a 90s assassin who wears flannel and you kill Kurt Cobain.
That you can send that to Ubisoft. And...
I already emailed them. Oh, right. I just got hired there. I'll see you guys. I actually can't write for Snack Bar anymore because I'm going to be writing all the Assassin's Creed games now.
Did you just say that about Uncharted a couple weeks ago?
I got a lot on my plate. I'm a really busy guy, really involved in the industry.
You have three different identities.
I need to, legally, to have all these jobs. It's really tough to fill out a W-2 when you have multiple personality disorder.
I want to mention one game real quick that I haven't had much time to play, but sure. Saints Row the Third. Is amazing. Everyone should play it.
I want it so bad.
I've only just scratched the surface, but just from the first couple of missions, it's just amazing. You don't have to have any experience with the other two games to jump into this, but it's absurd in the best ways possible. I mean, I don't know if you've heard, but there's a character who's a pimp who just talks.
Yeah, he talks in auto-tune.
Yeah, in auto-tune. That's just fantastic. Love it.
Okay. And there's that one moment that I'm really upset has gotten so popular. I blame Giant Bomb for getting so popular, but and it's also on YouTube now.
The Sublime song?
Yeah, the Sublime song where you just get in the car and they sing the entire freaking song.
The scene's awesome.
That.
I haven't watched it yet. I'm waiting to get to it in the game.
But... I watched the beginning of the video to see if they actually. I was like, there's no way to do it, and I saw them get in the car, and I want to see how they sang it. And it's like two guys just freaking screwing around singing it. It's amazing.
That is pretty amazing.
And it's an awesome song too. I love Sublime.
Yeah, me too.
I love that one great album they have.
Moving on to something completely unrelated to killing people in different ways. Let's talk about Graham. I know you've been playing Rayman, and I've just finished writing my review for it. So let's talk about Rayman.
Yeah. So let's get this out of the way. That game is gorgeous.
Yes.
Goddamn.
Yes.
Like, everything is just like everything is hand drawn, so it's just really lush, and the way you play the game, it's like it's hard to describe to people who haven't played it, but it's kind of it's a little like old school Sonic in that, like, there are times where you can just, like, totally blast through a level at any given point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Really just, like, get a lot of momentum, just keep going up slopes, like, crazy stuff. And so all this, like, really, really detailed world going by while you just run through it, amazing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think I'm gonna say this is maybe not in terms of raw horsepower, but this is the best-looking game of the year just because of how gorgeous it is and how much it stands out from, you know, the Battlefield 3s and whatnot.
Just, yeah.
I can't get over it. Every time I turn that game on, it just makes me smile.
Yeah. It has a little bit of the Western design syndrome to it, where they give you the opportunity to do some things that aren't necessarily worth doing, or...
Collect-a-thon stuff?
Well, not necessarily collect-a-thon stuff, but it's not necessarily that, like, you know, there are these two paths for a reason, or... things like that. Also, like, there are cooperative elements to playing with four players, but that pretty much limits itself to if you hold up, you can become like a platform that people can stand on. Mm-hmm. And there's never anything designed for that.
But do you miss a lot if you play it single player?
I don't think you do. It's a lot of fun. Is it worth playing
single player?
Let me just say this. I think the co-op is a neat element, but I think it's completely non-essential. This is a single-player game.
Okay. That's really interesting, because that's like why I haven't played New Super Mario Brothers or some other games, because feels like physically they made it pretty co-op, and single-player is just not as robust an experience, but I'd love to see this game. I wanted this game to play really well single-player.
Oh, yeah, well, I think this strikes a good balance, that the single-player is good. And that was the problem with a lot of games like that, like Mario, where it's like, this just, I don't know what I'm doing. And then the multiplayer is not required. There's some games where it's just kind of like, yeah, you really kind of need four people for this. But it's not as non-essential as it is, say, in Kirby, where it's just like, you're just kind of on the screen. Everyone's working together. Everyone's equal. There's a nice little, cooperation, competition aspect to everything.
I would say that pretty much you can play through the entire game in single player, and there's not a single moment in that game where you need another person or feel like you might need another person. I played a couple of levels with just a friend. I never tried full four player co-op, but it's cool. It's not bad. I mean, if you want to play this game with a friend, it's fine. But I mean, I would have really liked to see some kind of like special co-op mode that, or like just like some kind of challenges you do with friends or things like that. But
yeah, absolutely. There'd be nice to at least maybe have some collectibles, kind of do what Little Big Planet does with like, hey, you can go over here and there's this extra little area if you can get in there with two people or something like that. But the system's not really designed in a strict way like that. I mean, since it's a very momentum based game, so. There's not much mechanics-wise that you could do to, like, say, oh, only two people can go over here.
Yeah. And I'm actually kind of, it's like I said, I kind of appreciate when games have co-op but don't force co-op. Like, you can play, like I said, you can play through this entire game by yourself and get everything in the game, do everything in the game without even having a second person playing with you. But it's still fun to play co-op, so I mean.
And you totally should. I've been playing almost entirely co-op. And it's just a lot of fun. It has some of the issues that New Super Mario Brothers Wii had, but I don't know. The focus is more on collecting things rather than platforming. Like, there is platforming and sometimes it's tough, but it's not like, oh, okay, we just need to get one person over here and then let everyone else come by. It's actually just kind of, it's more freeform, which I guess you'd expect.
How far into the game are you?
I think I'm in the fourth area, something like that. Okay.
All right, so you're maybe almost halfway.
Yeah.
There are the second half of the game, especially, there are sections where I can imagine that getting infuriating in co-op, because there's a level right near the very end, actually, that requires such precise platforming that I can't imagine it being fun for more than just one person. So there are parts where I actually imagine it being better single player, but I mean, I can't speak from experience, because I only played the first few, I think maybe all of the first world with a second person. That's pretty much my experience in the co-op, but I don't know. I just think I've always seen Rayman as a single player experience, and I think it's still pretty amazing in single player. So I mean, if you're worried about not having fun because you're not playing co-op, I don't think that's a big concern, because I think it's still a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
But I mean,
otherwise that game's fairly straightforward. There's not that much to say to describe what's going on. They use all the classic Rayman, powers and, platforming elements.
The mosquito is back that you ride and you do those.
Yes.
Those rabbits in it.
Okay, there are no rabbits, which is magnificent.
Yeah.
I like the rabbits.
I mean, I like them too.
I like the rabbits, but I never liked Rayman with the rabbits. Mm-hmm. I think they're kind of separate things, and it's good to have Rayman by itself.
Rayman was never, it was kind of like, it was originally a Rayman game with rabbits, and then it became a rabbits game with Rayman. So it's kind of not, it never really felt like it never was a Rayman game, and Rayman just kind of felt like a character you played as. but it wasn't like you playing as Rayman. You could have swapped Rayman's skin with just like any normal generic looking platformer character, and it would have had the same, you know, impact.
Yeah. And we should move on, but before we do, Andrew, I don't know if this was your favorite thing about the game, but this is totally my favorite thing about the game. In the mosquito shooter segments?
Yes.
Glowbox.
Oh yeah, I actually played a couple of sections with Glowbox.
Yeah.
He does not ride the mosquito.
Right, the mosquito rides Glowbox.
It's pretty amazing, yeah.
What? How?
The mosquito's kind of carrying Glowbox.
Oh.
Yeah.
Because he's too big to ride the mosquito, I think. Right? That's what they're trying to get
across. So everyone else is riding mosquitoes, and then the mosquito just jumps on top of Glowbox and has him shoot things out of his mouth.
I did not expect that at all when I was playing as him.
We got there through, I think, 3 or 4 different levels, but every time we got there, it can't crack you up when it happens. This is
a charming game. This is a really just plain, flat-out delightful game. You'll have a smile on your face the entire time of playing it.
Yeah.
And the best part, it's like it's challenging. And like the first few levels are pretty easy, but once you get to like the halfway point, you start running into bosses and stuff, and it gets legitimately challenging at points. But it's never frustrating. Every time you mess up, you always feel like it's your fault, not the game's, and that's a sign of a great platformer, I think. Also, the music is incredible too.
Yeah, the music is rad. I was just about to say that the music is rad in this game.
Yeah. So speaking of platformers, the other game I've been playing this week is Super Mario 3D Land. It's in 3D, and it's Mario.
Is that as amazing as everyone's making it out to be?
Let me say this. It's not amazing. Oh. It's not, I mean, you know the kind of, like, moment you got when you turned on, I don't know, Super Mario Galaxy or even 64, where it's like this, wow, this is amazing. I haven't really experienced anything like this before. This is not that.
Okay.
This feels familiar almost all the time. And it's strange because even though it's Super Mario 3D Land, I constantly found myself reminded of other Mario games. None of those games are Super Mario Land. Or Super Mario Land 2.
I don't think Nintendo 1 should be reminded of Super Mario Land.
Yeah, I was gonna say. I don't think that's...
Well, it's just interesting that there are no ties to that sort of thing. But it feels a lot like... Well, it feels a lot like a 3D version of Super Mario 3, with different themed, you know, short segments. You know, even though it's in 3D, it's basically like a linear world.
To be fair, that most people who play that game will be completely happy with a Mario 3 in full 3D.
Oh, no. I shouldn't, you know, turn you off from getting this game. It's a good game. I just wanted to make the distinction that at this point in Mario's lifespan, it doesn't wow you. It's not, you know, it's very well executed. The 3D is, you know, they use it in subtle ways sometimes, but then clever ways other times. It's not, you know, I don't think it's this savior for how 3D works that a lot of people have been saying, but it definitely does. It uses the 3D well. To, you know, keep you entertained. At least that much is there.
So could you play through the entire game with the 3D off, and it wouldn't really change the experience all that much?
It would a little bit. Basically, with the 3D off, you're going to have trouble with certain secret rooms and and finding secret passageways. But, I mean, you can complete the game in 2D. You just won't be able to really get all of the collectibles unless someone tells you, hey, just, you know, go left here or something like that. It's just kind of like little hidden pathways. With depth perception, you can see where they are, which is really clever. But, you know, it's solid. In a world where we have games that really do raise the bar, this is good.
Not that
this,
game.
This is a good game.
It reaches the bar.
It does. Well, I mean, you know, the Mario bar is set high, so reaching the bar is pretty good. But, I mean, I think if you play this game, you're going to have a lot of fun with it. I mean, I don't think it's going to be the type of game that we talk about at the end of the year. you know, not like Super Mario Galaxy and Galaxy 2 were. It's better than Sunshine, because it doesn't rely on really dumb gimmicks. It relies on the gimmicks that everybody absolutely loves. Like the Tanuki suit. Oh, the Tanuki suit.
always the best power-up.
The Tanuki suit is easy mode. It really is. And then the Super Tanuki suit. Have you guys seen the Super Tanuki suit?
I've seen the Penny Arcade comic about it.
Yeah, so if you die on a level, I think 5 times or 10 times, I forget it. If you start dying like crazy, wherever you spawn, there will be a little box that just has, you know, like a little golden leaf in there, and then you hit it, and then it's a combination invincibility and Tanuki suit that you just it's permanent.
That's ridiculous. Isn't that kind of like the super guide?
You don't
guide?
Get to carry over. Yeah, it is. It is kind of your super guide in this game. There is no actual super guide in this game. You don't get to watch how things are done. But I mean, I'm okay with it being there. Of course, the problem is that it leads to a little bit of exploitation. If there were scores in this game, I think it would be a bigger problem. But as it is, you can only get that your first time through a level if you're trying to beat it. So there's a certain strategy to, if there's something difficult in that level, like you need to collect all the, you know, the star coins or something, you know, like there are 3 of them in every level and they're secret and hard to find or whatever. If you don't collect them the first time, you're not going to be able to get that, you know, easy mode bonus to collect them next time. But, I mean, I'm okay with it. It's not for us.
Yeah. I actually have a question regarding this is more a general question about Nintendo games, but it kind of stemmed from Mario 3D Land. This game, like with every Mario game, has lives, and I've heard they're pretty much. I mean, you will never game over in this game, is what I've heard for the most part. So I mean,
yeah,
at this point,
I mean the first couple worlds are easy, which I think that's what happens.
Yeah.
The first couple worlds are easy, and then you accumulate your 30 lives or whatever it is by the end of the second world. And then, yeah, maybe you just break even for the rest of the game, but then you're still sitting in 30 lives.
Yeah. So I'm wondering, I mean, do you think we'll ever see a Mario game without lives? And do you think people just like continue to like getting lives because that one-up sound is still amazing? Or do you think the next Mario game, do you think we'll ever see a Mario game that just abandons it?
Yeah, well, I think that brings up an interesting point.
Or maybe a Mario game that doesn't just throw lives at you willy-nilly.
Yeah, well, I don't think they're going to make a difficult Mario game. I think, you know, let's...
Yeah, I think that era is, like, gone by now.
Well, and also, like, the challenge comes from, you know, the second playthrough or finding secret things. Like, they've always tried to put in challenge but not have it important to getting through the game. And I think that's a good idea. But
so, I don't know. I think that at least with Galaxy 1, it went a little bit overboard. Like, hey, you start up the game again. Here's like 15, 20 extra lives.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's definitely true. But I think this is another example of, you know, everyone saying, oh, you know, why would you have lives? That's not a modern thing to do in a game. Nintendo tried this before. It's called the Wario Land series, and they were really the first ones to really put together a platformer that didn't rely upon lives as, you know, a challenging factor. If for those who haven't played those games, you know, you just got pushed back to an earlier level. You didn't die. You never die, but, like, you know, you get kicked back somewhere. I think they, you know, if they want to experiment with other game types, they make other games. I think Mario's always going to have lives. I think Mario's always going to be fairly easy with some collectibles, at least until it stops selling, you know, top 10 sales every year. There's no reason to really change that formula.
I mean, it just kind of comes back to the idea that Nintendo always rely, like, for their big franchises, I think both this and Zelda come to mind immediately, where they rely on these kind of tropes they've been relying on for years and years. But would people really care if there was a Mario game without lives and something like that? Would people really be upset, or would it just be like, oh, it's another Mario game, it's just slightly different because there's no lives?
I think that's a valid point, but I think it's also important to recognize that these elements are tropes because Nintendo used them.
Yeah.
And then everyone else copied them. So it's kind of, it's integral to what that experience is. They could experiment with a few things, but I don't think that that's really what's holding them back.
For example, like playing through Rayman, there are no lives. And, when you die, you just start, there are checkpoints and you start at those checkpoints and you continue to start at those checkpoints until you want to stop playing that level and you can quit and it'll start you from the beginning. But especially in the later half of the game, it still provided a lot of challenge. So the lives were an essential there, but you still got a challenge because it still like brought you back to a certain point in the game and you would have to do something over again to finally overcome them that. And you didn't need lives kind of like once you run out of lives, you had to start the entire level over again. It just kept starting you back in that checkpoint. And depending on the design, like they would need to design a little more difficult Mario game for that to actually be effective. But
yeah,
I would be interesting to see them try something like that. Cause I wonder, I mean, do people love lives because they've always been to Mario games, or is Nintendo just putting them in there just to continue that tradition? It's just something I've been thinking about ever since that game came out.
That's fair. But yeah, we should probably move on.
Okay. Jerry, you have been playing Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3. Is that correct?
That is correct.
How is this game? I can answer the question, but I'll let you answer.
It's actually pretty amazing, considering how diverse the roster was for the original game. Like, you'd think they'd be tapped out on character styles for like adding in 12 new characters, and I was greatly proven wrong.
Yeah, I have to admit, like the new characters they added, I thought some of them, or at least in some aspects, would be kind of like clones. But they every single character still plays almost entirely different, and they still have characters like Phoenix Wright that are, you know, they're so far away from most of the characters on the roster that seem to take a lot of getting used to, but once you do, they become really useful.
One thing I like to note about the new Capcom characters is that more so than the rest of the characters from the vanilla roster, mm-hmm. they borrow a lot of elements from the games from the games themselves where they came from. Like Phoenix has the whole turnabout investigation mode, a courtroom mode, turnabout mode thing going for him, where it's really reminiscent over the game he's from. Just like how Frank has the whole level up mechanic where he gains new moves as he levels up, just mm-hmm. like in this game.
Yeah, that's actually really cool. I'm glad, like, not a lot of the Capcom characters from the vanilla Marvel vs. Capcom really did that as much. So it's cool that they were able to still kind of incorporate new systems just for these, you know, these two specific characters.
Mm-hmm. And just like how, I don't know, I do feel that the new Capcom characters are much better implemented than the originals, aside from, well, one or two characters, like, say, Arthur still having the moving more or less like he did in his original game.
Yeah. Do you think, I mean, I'm playing it too, I'm enjoying it for the most part, but I'm kind of already burnt out on it in a way, like, I haven't played it all that much, but... Again, I'm not a huge fighting game fan. I've just always been a fan of the series, yeah. Mostly. But, I mean, the new characters are great, but it's still kind of... I mean, people made this argument when it was announced, but it still makes me feel like this really could have been... I think this could have been a downloadable expansion for a little cheaper. I mean, to be fair, the prices that Capcom is charging for DLC characters, it probably would have been the same price anyway, if anything.
No.
But I don't know. I just kind of feel like... I didn't feel this way when it was announced. I was like, okay, they've got it. I'm sure these new characters add a lot. And they do, but... I don't know. Aside from the new characters,
I've been following the recently been getting into the actual fighting game community for a while. I've seen the game being played at a level I'll probably never reach,
uh-huh.
And just seeing the game being played at that level and the changes coming from the original game to this one, I would say that the base mechanics were changed on a fundamental level that just DLC can't do.
Okay.
Like there is some stuff. To put another example, there's Mortal Kombat, which is a game that's getting patched fairly often for like game breaking infinites and infinite combos and very very cheap crap. But the end result from that is usually that they'll patch out so and so character can't do this infinite combo anymore. But they don't patch the reason why they could do the combo to begin with.
So you think we're going from the original to Ultimate, it's kind of fixed all that one fall swoop.
There is still some crap in the game, and there's still some changes that still boggle a lot of people. Like, it's typical Capcom balancing. Mm-hmm. But overall, it is a much more solid game than the original was. Though again, if it's not really something to really pick up if you only plan on playing the single player, because the single player is still kind of lackluster.
And they added that Galactus mode, and it's just kind of lame. It's kind of fun for like a second, and then you're like, oh, yeah. But it seems like I'm again I haven't played it all that much. I've only just barely experimented with most of the characters.
I've got 200 matches done online between ranked matches and actually playing with some friends. But and yeah, it really is a game to just play with other people as opposed to just doing the arcade mode over and over and over.
I guess you could say that about most fighting games, but it seems like especially true here. Because if you're getting this game for kind of expansion on single player experience,
it really depends. It depends on the fighting game itself. Like say. Yeah. Mortal Kombat and Blaze Blue have some very thorough tons of single player content to go through, but the dogma and on Capcom games seems to be like just get them if you plan on taking them on online or have people to play with. But if you're just going for the single player aspect, you really shouldn't pay much attention here.
And it seems like the improvements they've made from what you said are enough to make this a worthy purchase for those who really like the first game. And played competitively.
If they plan on adding more characters, I would hope that they decide to do another update further down the line, because I don't know, I don't think I like the idea of say them adding in I don't know 4-6 more characters and having them cost like $5 each.
Do you think we'll see a Super Street Fighter 4 to Arcade Edition update that's like $15 to $20 for this game sometime maybe in a year or so? That just adds like maybe 4 or 5 new characters plus a ton of little changes here and there.
It would have to be next year because they've already mentioned some reasons why we got the game at this point. It being the licensing games for Marvel is completely ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, there's tons of companies vying for the rights to the Marvel characters, and if they didn't release the update now, we wouldn't be getting it until, like, another year, two years down the line.
Mm-hmm.
So, if we got an update, it would be, like, next year, halfway through next year, maybe.
Do you think it's kind of viable? Do you think they can get away with an update like that?
Maybe. Yeah. Depends on how much Capcom gives the MBC3 team the budget they those guys compared to like say Street Fighter Cross Tekken or I don't know the eventual Street Fighter V.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What have you been playing, Matt?
Dick. I have been playing aside from Skyrim, which I had my first like Skyrim marathon, which like I had a day off and I just sat down and played Skyrim all friggin' day. I didn't do anything that interesting in it though, because there's a lot of me stumbling around trying to figure out how to play Skyrim effectively. But I played I've been taking advantage of having a PC by playing very old games, a whole lot of point and click adventures, which as you guys know are my favorite kind of game. What?
I played Beneath the Still Sky recently. I've only played a couple of hours, but it's pretty amazing. I'm surprised I never got into this game sooner.
Oh man, that game is so good. And speaking of that, I played all of Gemini Rue. I played through that game. That game is freaking wonderful. That game is amazing. I thought that it did some really interesting things with the mechanics, like having his eye, his mouth, his hands and his feet as separate action, have each separate actions mapped to them for any item that you find, and then having a lot of dialogue recorded and for specific things that happen. And it's a very like, I thought it would be very serious. Like I didn't think it would have that kind of goofy scum kind of joke, like kind of sense of humor, but it does. Like not as much as you know a Monkey Island or whatever, but it's still pretty funny. Like a lot of goofy stuff happens in the game where. Like, there's Easter eggs, where there are 4 hidden characters, all from Cowboy Bebop.
I saw you tweet about that. That sounds
amazing. It's cool, because the game is very influenced by Cowboy Bebop and Blade Runner, and, like, Firefly and that kind of stuff. and it's cool to see them directly, you know, reference that kind of thing. Where, like, you walk off a screen and then walk back on that screen and Spike Spiegel's standing there. And we're thinking, oh, it's a guy that they made look like Spike Spiegel as a little tribute. And I talked to him, and it's got the little picture of him next to all the stuff, his dialogue. And it's just a picture of Spike Spiegel, and he says something from the TV show, from Cowboy Bebop, which I recognize immediately because I'm such a fan of that show. And then I found Jet Black, and I haven't found Ed and Faye yet, but they're in the game. And little things like that. Like they pay direct homage to their inspirations. Like, there's a part where you're searching through a bunch of boxes, and they're all, like, military labeled or something, like, where it's just letters. So one of them is, like, SMI or something, which is Secret of Monkey Island. One of them is, like, it's, like, Secret of Monkey Island, one Space Quest, one is, I think Police Quest is another one.
Yeah.
And little stuff like that, and it's a lot of fun. The voice acting is kind of spotty, but a lot of it's just really well done. For an independent game, it's really well done. The game is absolutely freaking gorgeous. Like, I think sometimes it's almost to its detriment, like, trying to be exactly like, because it's exactly like a 90s LucasArts point-and-click adventure. So much so that I think they had parts that were really pretty that they kind of uglied up to make it look older. which totally it's effective. Like I was thinking, like, wow, if there were some more pixels in this picture, it would be a beautiful picture. But instead of just looking kind of muddy. Like, you can tell that a lot, some of it wasn't just pixel art, like, it was just a nicer picture that they pixelized, usually backgrounds, which is what would happen when they would paint backgrounds for a lot of those games. They would put it into a computer and it came out looking like that. But, like, the character animations are really cool, the way that the characters don't have facial features, like a lot of old point-and-click adventures, but still are very expressive. The story is fantastic. Like, the themes of the story, the theme of the Gemini of, you know, the twins, two halves of a thing, like the guy's looking for his brother. You play as two different characters and you flip back and forth between them, and they're two parallel stories, and you don't know how the stories line up until the end of the game. It's absolutely wonderful. It is totally worth, I think it's $15 on Steam now. Yeah. It is totally worth it. Absolutely.
I've only played the demo, but I'm really looking forward to diving into it.
Oh yeah, it's really good. There's achievements in it too. The achievements are really fun. There's it's a little actiony. Like, there are some action stuff, but it's just like cover-based shooting. But the shooting is done, like, so close to being done really well, where it's not done that well. Like, it's done where it's very timing based, but the timing is very confusing and not really well spelled out. You can tell there's a lot of stuff going on under the surface that you're not privy to while you're doing that. And a lot of times you'll get hurt and it won't feel like it's your fault.
Mm-hmm.
And also that's annoying because there's an achievement where if you don't get hit in any of the gunfights, you get an achievement.
It seems like there's always that kind of problem where you take a genre like adventure games and try to insert action-y elements and they never really pan out as well as you'd hope.
Well, not even like action-y, but just it was, it's like hard to explain. It wasn't that well implemented, but it was fine. Like, it's not in your face enough to do it. It's still very puzzly. None of the puzzles get too obtuse. Like, most of the, I had to consult a guide a couple times like I do with any point-and-click adventure. But usually it's like, how was I supposed to figure that out? But in this, it was like, oh, I'm a fucking idiot, of course. You know, that thing was right in my face and I didn't see it because I wasn't pixel hunting enough. It's fantastic. Like, if you like point-and-click adventures at all, which I freaking do so much, do it. Just pick it up. Also, check out the Snack Bar Games community Steam thing that I'm going to make right now because I'm... I've been meaning to make it all week and keep forgetting. And also contact me on Steam. I'm JButton on Steam.
I keep forgetting to add you on Steam.
I think I added you. Did I add you? I thought I added you. Maybe I didn't.
Yeah, well, you know, join our Steam group. Add us. Have lots of fun playing
SBG
random stuff.
SBG community, just like the Twitter.
Yeah.
Yes. Join us playing the amazing Gemini Rue multiplayer that doesn't exist.
Yeah. Well, Team Fortress. We're going to start having a... I guess bi-weekly Team Fortress things. We could do that.
That's kind of like Gemini Rue.
TF Tuesday.
He's exactly like Gemini Rue.
Very 50s influenced. Kind of noirish. He's a spy. He's got spies in Gemini Rue. Oh, and that stuff too. The whole noir thing. Oh, it's awesome. Like, I also loaded up the Blade Runner game from 1997. And it was cool to play. I only played a little bit of that. That's the next game I'm going to really jump into. Because I've also been playing the first Monkey Island, the special edition that came out a couple years ago for Steam.
Yeah.
And it's cool to see, like, two different takes on noir adventure game next to each other, because my two favorite things are noir and adventure games.
That Blade Runner game's, well, don't get your hopes too high for that one. It's
I always hear it's really good.
Maybe I'm in the minority then, but I never really liked it that much.
The opening cuts.
I think it's worth playing though. But
as a huge fan of the movie, I'm very confused as to where it falls in, because it's very much the movie. Like, you see scenes that are directly taken from the movie. Am I playing as Deckard? He's wearing Deckard's coat, but he doesn't look or sound anything like Deckard.
I always assumed it was a parallel story.
Yeah, that's why. I just figured I was another Blade Runner, but he's just kind of acting like he's Deckard.
I don't know. Maybe it's their attempt to recreate that character without fully recreating that character. Which maybe it's just a different take on the movie. I honestly can't remember much except that I didn't like it that much. Mm-hmm. I do have one question for you. Have you ever played the team that did Gemini Rue? Have you ever played their other games?
Mostly
the Black Wolf games.
Yeah, I was reading about those. I have not yet. But are they point and click adventures?
Yes.
I'll give them a chance.
All their games are point and click adventures, except for some puzzle game I can't remember the name of.
I'm on board with these guys.
Yeah, they have like four games in the Blackwell series, and then they have another game. I think it's called Emerald City something.
Yeah, like usually when I finish a point and click adventure, I'm like, all right, cool. Like, I don't have to play that. Like, I'm playing Monkey Island again. I've literally played it in like 5 years. It's one of my favorite games ever, but I've never felt much need to play it again because it's, you know, it's a point and click. It's one way to solve everything. But this game has Gemini Rue has developer commentary. So I'm going to play it again, and you get an achievement for finishing it with the developer commentary. And it's also it's a good excuse to go back and play it again to do all the stuff that you missed. Mm-hmm. You know, usually in point and click adventure you don't miss much because they pretty much give you the whole thing on your first. Like, it's like what we were saying about Uncharted a couple weeks ago, where you don't really need to play it again. But at the end of this game, I was ready to boot it right back up again and play it. Like, it's like a 6 hour game. And I was all about this world and this story and these characters. And it's so rare that I feel that way about a game. And that's the thing that I search for. That's the thing I look for in video games. And I totally got it out of this, and I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I'm so glad I played it before the end of the year, too, because it's most definitely in my top 10.
All right. Well, I think that about wraps it up, guys. All right, so next week we will continue our November weekly podcast extravaganza. We'll talk mostly about Skyward Sword
and
whatever else we managed to dig up. For Matt, Jerry, and Andrew, I'm Graham. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Snack Bar Games podcast. Follow us on the web at snackbar-games.com or on Twitter @snackbargames.